Now with this as the summary of the seventh chapter, we can now enter into the eighth chapter. And the eighth chapter is going to be actually a small diversion. So we have to see a brief introduction of the eighth chapter also here before we go into the eighth chapter. So it is a small diversion. And how can we say it's a small diversion? We said in the middle sixth chapter of Gita, 7 to 12, one of the topics is Upasana, the meditation of the Lord. And Upasana is meditation on Sagunam or Nirgunam Brahman. Saguna Brahman or Nirguna Brahman. We should remember, Upasana means it should be Sagunam only. Any Upasana, any meditation can be only on a Saguna Vastu. If Nirgunam, the name is not Upasana, but we have already seen this term, it is called Nididhyasanam. So worship of the Upasana of the Saguna Brahma is called Upasana. And the Upasana of the Nirguna Brahma is called Nididhyasana. Actually, we saw it in the sixth chapter introduction when we talked about Dhyanam, meditation. So Upasana saguna, means Saguna Dhyanam and Nididhyasana means Nirguna Dhyanam. So in the Madhyama Shatka, Upasana is highlighted as the sadhana. That's what we saw. And that too, Virat Upasana. Upasana, the Virat Swarupa. So the Upasana again can help in two different ways. And what are those different ways? One, it can be used for Chitta Shuddhi and Chitta Naishchalyam. And after getting Chitta Shuddhi and Chitta Naishchalyam, one can come to Jnana Yoga, Vedanta Vichara, Nirguna Brahma of Atma Jnanam in this life itself. One can get, he can become a Jivan Muktaha. And by getting this knowledge, he can be liberated here and now. He doesn't have to look for a liberation after birth. He can be liberated here and now. He can get Jivan, he can become a Jivan Muktaha in this life itself. And what is the second benefit? In the second one, a person continues the Upasana throughout the life, never coming to Vedanta Vichara at all, never coming to Atma Jnanam. And not only that, even at the time of death, he practices the Upasana itself and he dies doing Upasana, extreme discipline, extreme austerities. He dies, ends that life doing Upasana. And if a person dies doing Upasana throughout life, what happens to him? Certainly, he won't get Jivan Mukti. Why? Because Atma Jnanam he did not get. He is still an Ajnani only. He was doing Upasana all right, but he did not get Jnanam. But because of the strength of the Upasana, he is supposed to go through the Shukla Gati. When a person dies, when the prana goes out, it can go through several routes. And the most important and the most blessed route is called Shukla Gati. And such a person, he will reach Brahma Loka. Actually, we are going to see all about this later in this chapter. I am just only mentioning them now. And in Brahma Loka, he will get Atma Jnanam as taught by none other than Brahmaji himself. So, Brahmana Upadishtaha Sanna. Better teacher, so there is a better teacher there. Brahmaji himself will be the teacher. Better environment, very purified Atma he will be. So, he will be able to gain this knowledge very quickly. So having gained the knowledge, there he gets Jivan Mukti liberation. So Upasana, which he practiced in the Manushya Janma, it will take him to Brahma Loka, from where he will get liberation. So this is the second benefit of Upasana. So this is called Krama Mukti. In the other case, we call this Jivan Mukti. He gets Mukti while living. He gets liberated while living in this Janma itself. He is called a Jivan Mukta. Whereas the other person, he dies, he goes to Brahma Loka through Shukla Gati, and there he is given this knowledge by none other than Brahmaji himself, and from there he reaches liberation. That is called Krama Mukti because it is in stages. Mukti in stages, Krama. So not Sadhyo Muktihi or Jivan Muktihi, immediate liberation, but liberation after going to Brahma Loka and getting Jnanam there. Whether it is in Brahma Loka or in this Loka, Mukti Hetu is only Jnanam. unless a person gains jnanam, he cannot get mukti. So upasana can help a person either in getting jivan mukti or krama mukti. And here we should not get confused with videha mukti, because videha mukti is what a jivan mukta will get at death. When a jivan mukta in this life, when he dies, at the end of this life, he will not get any more body. So he will get videha mukta at the end of this life. So that is not compared here at all with any one of the other muktis, jivan mukti and krama mukti. The only difference is what? In jivan mukti, atma jnanam should be gained in this janma itself, in this birth itself. Whereas in krama mukti, it is gained after going to brahmaloka. So in jivan mukti, atma jnanam is gained in this life. And in krama mukti, atma jnanam is gained after he dies and goes to brahmaloka. So in the seventh chapter, the topic was jivan mukti alone. Because a jnani bhakta is a jivan muktaha. We saw this in the seventh chapter. So artha bhakta, artharthi bhakta, they all practice upasana, they become jignasu bhakta. And they may discontinue upasana and may come to nirguna jnanam and become jnani bhakta in one and the same life, and they may get liberated. So after becoming a jignasu bhakta, they may not do upasana anymore and all that. They will try to go through jnana yoga, shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam, and then they will continue to do nirguna jnanam, nirguna upasana, and become jnani bhaktaha and get jivan mukti. So upasana as a means to jivan mukti was talked about in the seventh chapter. We have to understand these differences very clearly. Upasana was talked about as a means for jivan mukti in the seventh chapter. And later in the ninth chapter, tenth chapter, 11th chapter, 12th chapter, etc., the topic will be similar. That is upasana as a means to gaining jivan mukti. Whereas in the eighth chapter, upasana as a means to krama mukti is pointed out. So this chapter is a unique chapter. This is a diversion chapter where krama mukti is talked about. The entire eighth chapter is krama mukti topic. There is no jivan mukti here at all. That is why we said there is a small diversion. Whereas all other things, they talk about jivan mukti. But to introduce this topic, Arjuna's question are based on the previous chapter, the seventh chapter, towards the end, which we just mentioned. And by way of answering these questions, Krishna introduces this concept of krama mukti. So now we understand the concept, the development. In the seventh chapter, Arjuna asks several questions, and by way of answering them, Krishna is introducing this topic of krama mukti in chapter 8. So Krishna is introducing the prayana kalam topic of seventh chapter. Otherwise, for jivan mukti, prayana kalam is not at all required. For jivan mukti, the prayana kalam and all those things, they are not at all important, because a jivan mukta is liberated at the time of atma jnanam in that janma itself. He doesn't have to go through any krama mukti. He will be liberated in that janma itself. So after atma jnanam, it is of no significance to him at all. Krama mukti or avideha mukti, none of those things are of significance to him, because he already got atma jnanam. That is why in Tattva Bodha, in the last chapter, it was said, actually those who attended Tattva Bodha, just if you can remember, Tanum Tejatu Va Kashyam Swapachascha Grihe Athava Jnana Samprapti Samaye Muktaha Asau Vigadashayaha. No question of Uttarayanam, person dying in Uttarayanam, Dakshinayanam, night, day, Krishna Paksha, Sukla Paksha, within the house or outside the house, none of those things matter. When a person becomes a jivan mukta, all these things are insignificant, because he is a jnani who is ever established in Brahman. He is liberated while living, and whenever, wherever, whatever, however he dies, he attains videha mukti. He will not take another janma. He will not get into another body. Whereas for a upasaka, the type of death, the time of death, the manner of death, the place of death, all those things, they are very important. And if he observed all the types of disciplines, all the austerities at the time of death, then the Upasaka can go at best to Brahmaloka. He can go to Brahmaloka where he can get again Jnanam, and then he can get Krama Mukti there. So there also he has to become a Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampannaha and acquire Jnanam and only can be liberated. So whichever is, so if you take these two, we can immediately conclude which is better, Jivan Mukti or Krama Mukti. So Krishna wants to show the superiority of Jivan Mukti over Krama Mukti here. So 8th chapter talks about Krama Mukti, not for the sake of us to follow, but to point out how many difficulties are there in Krama Mukti. Krama Mukti is difficult. One has to do all these things, observe all these things, and then go to Brahmaloka. And Brahmaloka also he has to do Shravana Mananam and all that thing, and follow all the procedures, and then go through Jnana Marga, and then go to Mukti. Whereas in Jivan Mukti, the Mukti can be attained in this very life. So Arjuna, do not vote for Krama Mukti, choose Jivan Mukti instead. So that is the message of Krishna to Arjuna. So we get Arjuna's questions in the introduction, which we will read. Ata ashtamodhyayaha Arjuna uvacha kim tat brahma kim adhyatmam kim karma purushottama adhibhutam cha kim proktam adhidaivam kim uchyate adhiyajnakatam kotra dehesmin madhusudana prayanakale cha katam yosiniyatatmabihi. So Arjuna raises the question based on the last two shlokas of the 7th chapter, if you remember, in which the 7 new terms were introduced by Krishna. And Arjuna is asking about each one of them in this chapter. First question is, Kim Tad Brahma? Because in the previous chapters, 29th shloka, what Krishna said? Te Brahma Tadvidu Kritsnam. And that is what he is referring to here. So, Kim Tad Brahma? What is that Brahman which you talked about in the 29th shloka of the previous chapter? And the second question is what? Kim Adhyatmam? What is inner self? Adhyatmam. And then Kim Karma? What is karma? O Purushottama. Then Adhibhutam Cha Kim Proktam? Again, that refers to the 30th shloka. What is meant by or said by Adhibhutam? Adhidaivam Kimuchyate? What is said to be Adhidaivam? Adhidaivam Kaha? Who is? And again, Adhiyajna. Atra Asmin Dehe Katham? It's an additional question actually. As part of Adhiyajna, how does Adhiyajna reside in the body? So Asmin Dehe Katham Nivasati Tishtati? So all the 6 terms had been asked by Arjuna. Then come to the last part. He comes to there and says, Prayana Kale Katam Nyeyaha Asi. How are you to be thought of at the time of Prayanam, at the time of Maranam, at the time of death? How one should think of you? By whom? Niyatatma Bihi. By the people of mind control, self-control. By those people who have self-control and mind control, how should they think of you at the time of death? So here Atma refers to the mind, not Sachidananda Atma. Atma refers to mind, and Niyataha means control. So Niyataha Atma Antakaranam Yasyasaha. Okay, that is how this Atma is, we have to understand here. So those self-controlled people, how are you to be remembered at the time of death? By those self-controlled people, how are you to be remembered at the time of death? So Arjuna uses the word self-control because he knows remembering the Lord at the time of death requires tremendous self-control. One cannot just like to think, okay, I can think of the Lord at the time of death, because you have no control of free will at the time of death. Everything is in the reversal mode. Whatever you take in is thrown up. So there is no question of free will at that time acting on you. So you have to make it a point to almost make it mechanical to think of the Lord at the time of death. So even normally, when we are healthy, we are not able to remember the Lord most of the time. When we are healthy itself, we are not able to remember the Lord. So, prana prayana samaye kapa vata pittaihi kanta avarodana vidav smaranam kutaste. How are you going to think of the Lord when you are in such a difficulty, when there is so much of difficulty at the time of maranam, how to think of the Lord? So it requires a lot of self-control, and so he uses the word niyatatma. And how are they to be remembered at the time of prayanam, at the time of death, which is the seventh question, and it is also based on Krishna's statement in the previous chapter. As we just now mentioned, in the seventh chapter, Krishna gave all these terms, and the question is based on those. So, prayana kale apicha mam te viduhu yukta cheta saha. Now, Krishna is going to answer each one of them, but very briefly. He is going to answer all of them very briefly, except for the last topic. So, he says now, Sri Bhagavanu vacha aksharam brahma paramam svabhavodhyatma muchyate bhuta bhavodbhavakaro visarga karma sangitaha. So first Krishna defines Brahman. He goes in the same order as Arjuna had asked. Whatever question Arjuna asked, in the same order he gives the answer. First question is what? What is Brahman? Paramam aksharam brahma asti is the answer Krishna gives. Brahman is nothing but the paramam aksharam, the highest imperishable truth. Paramam aksharam means, paramam is truth, akshara means imperishable truth. So paramam aksharam is highest imperishable truth. Kshati means to perish. Naksharati means aksharam. Aksharam is naksharati, which does not perish. So this definition is necessary because the word Brahma has got different meanings based on different contexts. One has to understand the word Brahma very carefully because different contexts, they have different meanings. That is why Arjuna asked, what do you mean by Brahma? Because if there is only one meaning, Arjuna would have known. But there are so many meanings. The word Brahma has already occurred in the fourth chapter we have already seen. Brahma Arpanam, Brahma Havihim, Brahma Agnav, Brahma Nahutam, Brahma Ivatena Gantavyam, Brahma Karma Samadhyana. We have seen that sloka earlier. Arjuna's doubt is what? In the seventh chapter, when Krishna used the word Brahma, which one he meant? So that is Arjuna's doubt, because several meanings for Brahma. Veda is also called Brahma. Brahmana is called Brahma. Brahma is Omkara, also is Brahma. So, Maha iti Brahma, Brahmana vava sarve veda mahiyante. That's what Upanishad says. And of course, Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, Brahma, that also we know that Brahma refers to the absolute reality. So, which Brahma you mean is the doubt of Arjuna. So, Krishna clarifies, it is Aksharam. The Brahma I am referring to is Aksharam, the one that is imperishable. So all other different definitions, they are all excluded. One cannot think whether it is Veda, whether it is Brahmana, none of those things apply here. It is Aksharam, the imperishable one. All others are all perishable. So pralaya kale sarvam nashayati. At the time of pralaya, everything will go away, nothing will remain. So Veda is Ksharaha. Veda also will go away. Omkara is Ksharaha. That will go away also. Brahmana is also Ksharaha. At the time of pralayam, everything will go away. Only the nirgunam brahma is aksharam. Nirgunam brahma alone will exist. That alone is aksharam. And so Krishna uses the word aksharam here to define Brahma. These are all only brief definitions, very cryptic definitions, since Krishna wants to deal more with the prayana kalam in this chapter. Prayana kalam at the time of death. That is the thing which Krishna wants to talk about more in this chapter. So he gives the answers to the other questions in a very cryptic, very simple manner. So all other definitions he finishes very, very briefly. Then what is adhyatmam? Swabhavaha adhyatmam uchyate. Swabhavaha, one's own true nature. Swabhavaha. What is that? Satchidanandatma. My true nature is what? Satchidanandatma, Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, Brahma. The Satchidanandatma is my true nature. So Adhyatma means Atma, the inner self. Question is, Adhyatma is what? The answer is Atma, the very self. This word has got an interesting meaning also. Adi Atma is there. There the word Atma means Shariram. And Adi means that which is inside the Shariram. You know how beautiful it is given here. Krishna does not just give Atma. He said Adi Atma. And in that Adi Atma, Atma means body only. Whereas the term Adi, that indicates that which is inside the body. And Adi Atma, the one that is inside the body, which is Adi Shariram, which is within the body, is none other than this Atma, the Chaitanya. So Atmanam Shariram Adikrityaha Pravrittam Adhyatma. So that which is within the body, the thing called inner self. Then what is karma? Next question. He is taking karma as offering of various things into an homakunda, in agnikunda, in a yajna. That's what he is considering. So he is not talking about all other rich karma. He is talking about these yajna rituals only as karma here. Vaidika rituals. He is talking about the Vaidika karma as the karma and not any other local activity. But the ritualistic activities in which various oblations are offered into the fire. In a yajna, in a homam, you offer so many things into the fire. And so he uses the word visargaha. Visargaha means dropping. Dropping what? Dropping various materials. Various materials into what again? Into the homakunda as ahuti, into fire. So contextual meaning should be taken here. It is not any dropping. Actually, that is the definition of a yaga. Yaga means what? Devata uddeshena agnav dravya tyagaha yagaha. Keeping some devata in mind, in view, devata uddeshena. Offering some material into the fire is called yaga. Agnav dravya tyagaha. You offer into the agni, you sacrifice all these materials. And that is here called as visargaha. And Krishna gives further explanation also to that. This karma alone, this Vaidika karma alone, is responsible for the rebirth of beings. Because all beings are born because of what? Because of karma alone. By our various actions and the accompanying karma phalam, we take janmas, various janmas. So Krishna says, Bhuta Bhava Udbhava Karaha. Bhuta Bhava Udbhava Karaha. So karma is that which responsible for the origination of all beings. Because if punya karma is done, then there is birth as human being and higher beings. If punya papa mixture is there, it becomes ordinary humans. And if papa karma alone is there, it gives lower births. Asurik, Rakshasik, all those lower births. So all beings are born by some type of karma alone. Every being is born by some type of karma alone. So Krishna says, karma is that which is responsible for all the beings in creation to be born. That is responsible for that. So with this, the karma definition also is over. So three has been defined by Krishna and he will take up the fourth definition. Kim adibhutam, etc., which occurs actually in the fourth shloka. Adibhutam sharobhavaha. He is talking about adibhutam in the fourth this thing. Adibhutam sharobhavaha purushaschadi devatam adiyajnohamevatra dehe dehabhrutam vara. That is the fourth shloka. And he talks about adibhutam there. Adibhutam sharobhavaha. All perishable things and beings are called adibhutam. In short, the entire material universe, all of them are perishable. So samasta jada prapanchaha, it is called adibhutam. And why it is called adibhutam? Because all of them are related to the panchabhutani. All the panchabhutas only, they are all related to them. So bhutani adikritya vartate iti adibhutam. And when we say adibhutam, not only we should take the entire creation like sun, moon, fire, water, stars, etc. Even when we take living beings, their bodies also are perishable. So they also come under Adibhutam only. Which alone is popularly called in the Puranas as what? Adibhautikam. Called Adibhautikam. It's only a derivation of Adibhutam. Adibhautikam is nothing but a derivation of Adibhutam. So Adibhautika Prapanchaha, which is the material universe, which is Kshara, which is perishable. And Bhavaha refers to both things and beings. Bhavaha refers to both things and beings. And inanimate and Chetana, Achetana Vastu, all of them. And when we take the beings, only the Shariram part alone should be taken here, since the Shariri, the Atma, and that is not Adibhuta. The Atma part of it. So as when we take a person, a Jivaha, it's a mixture of both the body and Atma. Only the body part alone should be taken here. Atma should not be taken. That is not Adibhuta. Body part alone should be taken. So this is true not only in this context. When we say beings are born, some beings are born, there also, what do we really mean? We should take only the body part of it. When we say somebody is born, only the body is born. We cannot take even the sukshma shariram, because that has been traveling all the time. We cannot take the atma also. I have explained this thing earlier. Actually, I think during Tattubodha or some other context, what happens at the time of death? When somebody dies, what happens is only the sthula shariram, the grass body alone perishes. The sukshma shariram leaves along with chaitanyam and that travels based on one's own vasanas, punya papa karmas, that goes on looking for another body to enter so that it can exhaust the punya papa through that body. So the sukshma shariram travels. Only the sthula shariram, grass body alone, that dies, that perishes. So, when we say a being is born, we refer to only the grass body, shariram. Similarly, here also, bhavaha, things and beings. Bhavaha refers to things and beings, that is indicated by shariram. They are all known as adibhutam. So, with that, the fourth question also is answered. And the next question is what? Adidaivam kim? That is the fifth question. What is that? Purushascha adidaivatam. Purushascha. Just as behind the material body, there is an intelligent principle controlling the human body, which we call it as Jivaha, Jivatma or Jivaha. Similarly, the whole material universe, that is also controlled by a total intelligent principle known as Ishvara or Hiranyagarbha. These terms are all already familiar because we have talked about these terms earlier many times. That Hiranyagarbha alone is called Adidaivatam. Hiranyagarbha alone is called Adidaivatam. So when we say the sun following the law and order perfectly, you know, when the sun shines, it rises and sets. When it follows the law and order perfectly, we do not accept that the material sun will obey the laws by itself. The sun, when it rises in the sky, it is not the material sun that follows the order. It must be governed by a presiding deity, which we call it as Surya Devata. Actually, these concepts are all explained during Tattvabodha lectures. At that time, we have told all these things, they are all presided by a Devata, Adidevata, Surya Devata. So that Surya Devata is the intelligent principle governing the laws of the sun. So Prithvi Devata is the intelligent principle governing the Prithvi, the earth. So for every matter principle, we have an intelligent principle behind it, perfectly governing the orderliness. Bhisha smatvat pavate bhishodeti suryaha bhisha smat agnischendrascha mrityurdhavati panchama iti. So by fear of the cosmic order, the sun shines, the wind blows, even the Indra and Agni, they function. And even the Mrityu Devata, he runs from place to place, taking care of so many things, again, because of respect to the law and order. So that is the principle. So we never believe in the matter observing the law by itself. No inert matter will observe any law by itself. This is called materialism, where they say that is how it is. Earth by itself maintains its axis. That's what they say. All the planets by themselves, they maintain their orbit. If you argue this way, it is materialism. And in Vedanta, we do not accept that. So wherever there is a law, there must be a governor of that law. That is what Vedanta says. Wherever there is a law, there should be a governor of that law. And as we give the example often, the moment there is a traffic rule, there must be somebody to maintain that traffic rule. Even after putting traffic lights, we need a policeman to oversee that, whether people follow the traffic light or not. In India, it is very, very common. We always require an intelligent principle, because when there is a law, there is always a violation also. Many laws are created mostly to violate only in most places. If it has to go on without violation, there must be someone governing it. Somebody should be implementing it. Okay. And when we look at the intelligence principle with respect to any object of creation, we call it a devata. At the Vesti level, we call it a devata. But when we look at the intelligence principle with respect to the whole creation, not at individual level, with respect to the whole creation, it becomes Hiranyagarbha. So at Vesti level, it is a devata. At the Samashti level, at the total level, it is called Hiranyagarbha. So Surya Devata, Chandra Devata, Varuna Devata, all put together, they become Devata Mayi Hiranyagarbha. So Surya Devata by itself is Surya Devata, Chandra Devata, Varuna Devata, Indra Devata. All those things put together is called Hiranyagarbha. Of course, Adibhutam will be Pratyaksham. Adidevatam is to be understood. It should be only discerned. Adibhutam is Pratyaksham. You can see. Whereas Adidevam is subtle. It has to be only understood. It has to be only discerned. It is Paroksha Vishaya. Adibhutam is Pratyaksha Vishaya. Adidevam is Paroksha Vishaya. We cannot see the Devata. Even if you dig the earth, if you want to look for Prithivi Devata, you can go any deep. Doesn't matter, you can never see Prithivi Devata. It is a subtle form. We cannot see the moon Devata by landing in the moon. So Devata cannot be seen. Parokshena Paroksha Priya Ivahi Devaha. That is how we recite. So the Vedas themselves say that the Devatas are Paroksha Priyaha. They are subtle. They cannot be seen easily. They cannot be seen at all easily. So that is not only true at the Adibhuta level also. If you take living being also, with your sense organs, do you perceive the intelligence principle? With our sense organs, can we perceive the intelligence principle? We don't. When I look at you all, everybody, I never see the life principle or the intelligence principle governing your activities. I see your handwriting. I see your eye winking, all those I see, but who makes the commandment, that I cannot see. Who makes the commandment to you to wave your hand, I cannot see that. I am seeing your material body only, but the intelligence behind every one of your movements, the intelligence behind you, that is invisible, that I cannot see. Similarly, behind the creation also, I cannot see the intelligence principle. If you cannot see, then how can you say that it is there? That is a common question. People will say, if you cannot see it, how do you believe that it is there? Because it is functioning in harmony. Just as I know that there is an intelligence principle behind you, because of your lively actions, similarly, because of the harmony and order of creation, I come to know that there is an intelligence principle behind it also, which we call as Hiranyagarbha. So which Krishna calls here as Purushaha. Purushaha here means Hiranyagarbha. And if we take this as the cosmic person, Hiranyagarbha, then what will happen then? The Adidevam part will be the intelligence principle governing the Adibhutam part. So the answer for both of them, Adidevam part will be the intelligence principle governing the Adibhutam part. So Adibhutam becomes the Shariram for the Adidaivam. Just as I control my Shariram, I control my body, the Hiranyagarbha controls his total body, which consists of the sun, moon, stars, earth, water, all those things. So, and this Shariram alone is called Virat Shariram, the cosmic body. So, Virat is the name of Adibhutam and Hiranyagarbha is the name of Adidaivam. Now, we can understand the terminologies very, very easily now. Virat is the name of Adibhutam and Hiranyagarbha is the name of Adidaivam. Okay. So, with this, the fifth question also is answered by Krishna. And what is the sixth question? Adi yajnaha kaha atra dehe. That was asked by Arjuna. What is Adi yajna? What is the meaning of Adi yajna? The Lord presiding over all the yajnas or karmas. That is Adi yajna. In Sanskrit, we call it as karma adhyakshaha. Karma adhyakshaha. The one who presides over all karmas, all actions. And registers who did what. He has a beautiful account. He is the greatest accountant. He registers who does what, who deserves punya, who deserves papa, everything he records. And all this has to be maintained by an intelligence principle. It cannot be just like that maintained by some inert principle. It should be maintained by an intelligence principle, just as a supervisor observes the workers, who has worked extra, who has done overtime, all those, who deserves promotion, who has to be sacked. All these things supervisor observes. So, karma adhyakshaha, who later becomes karma paladatha. So, the one who oversees all actions being done by so many people, he becomes the karma paladatha, the one who dispenses the fruit of your actions based on one's own karma. And that Lord presiding over karma is called Adi Yajnaha. And generally, that Lord is named as Vishnu. So, Adi Yajnaha is that Lord who observes and presides over all the karma that is done by people, and that Lord is Mahavishnu. So, Yajno Vai Vishnuho. When we say Yajno Vai Vishnuho, that Adi Yajnaha he is. And Vishnu being here in the form of Krishna, he says, I alone am the Adi Yajna. And where do I reside? Atra Dehe, residing in the body of everyone. So, as Adi Yajna, I reside in the body of everyone. Because the supervisor has to see the activity. He has to go to the site of action. Remaining in the office, he cannot know. Maybe he may have so many closed circuit TVs. And through that he can watch. But there is always some corner, remote corner, which is not seen by the camera perhaps. So, Vishnu has to come down and reside in the body of everyone, closely watching each person's thoughts, each person's motivation, action, everything. So Vishnu has to come down and reside in the heart of everyone. And so the Lord says, I reside in the body of everyone and observe what all each person is doing. That is why in our tradition we normally say, don't think that you can keep any secret with you at all. He is watching. Who is that he? Adi Yajnaha. Mahavishnu. So the moment we know it, we will not do anything in secret at all, because there is nothing like secret. He knows everything, because we know God is behind all and he is watching over us all the time. We can cover up everything from everyone else. I can put four walls and a roof and I can think that nobody can watch me, but not from him. He always watches. So Krishna says, Atra Dehe, Asmin Dehe, in this body, Adi Yajnaha. And Arjuna is addressed here as Dehabhritam Varaha. That is the name of Arjuna here. It is the name for Arjuna given by Krishna. O Arjuna, the Adi Yajna in the body is in the body of everyone. Dehabhritam Varaha. Dehabhrit means a jiva. Dehabhrit means a jiva. Any jiva is called Dehabhrit. Why? Because any jiva possesses a body. Dehabhrit means what? Deham Vibharti Iti Dehabhrita. The one who possesses a body is called Dehabhrita. And every jiva possesses the body or wants the body, they are all called Dehabhrits. And Varaha, Varaha means the greatest. So Dehabhritam Varaha means the greatest among all jivas or all humans in this context. Thereby glorifying Arjuna as the greatest man. Krishna glorifies Arjuna as the greatest person here. So with this, the six questions have been answered in two shlokas. In just two shlokas, Krishna answered all the six questions. Because Krishna wants to hurry up, because he wants to take up the seventh question, because that alone is going to be taken as the main theme of this chapter, and that is introduced in the fifth shloka, which we will see in the next webinar. Yo veda dausvara prokto vedante cha pratishtitaha tasya prakriti leenasya parasa maheshwaraha sri krishna arpanamastu.